As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., wealth management specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
It's a busy day. You know, this president keeps us on our toes, obviously. We're also learning more about the nut job who tried to burn down the governor's residence in Pennsylvania. He was off his meds, apparently, according to his mother. Deeply deranged man, but does not seem to be politically or religious motivated. Just seems to be that the guy's off his freaking rocker. But we'll find out more details, obviously, about him as we go along. And there's a Democrat running in New Jersey, known as the $35 million candidate, a Democrat running for governor, because the teachers union is entirely behind this person running for governor. And this is the problem that I have with teachers unions, and why it is that Democrats who at one time, like Cory Booker is a great example of this, who embraced school choice. Josh Shapiro is a great example of this, who at one point embraced school choice. The minute that they eye national ambition or statewide ambition, all that goes aside. All that goes aside. And NJ.com has a really good piece on this. The $35 million candidate. New Jersey teachers are funding, there's a man named Sean Spiller, who's running for governor. New Jersey teachers are funding his campaign, whether they want to or not. And this guy portrays himself as a working class guy, as a working class father of two and high school biology teacher. He's like a blue collar, looks like a normal guy. He has a $35 million war chest, made possible by one thing alone, the coffers of the powerful union that he's in charge of. Because Spiller leads the state's largest union, the nearly 200,000 member New Jersey Education Association, a mover and shaker in Trenton that has for decades used its financial largesse and organizational heft to win outsized influence. And this time, the teachers union is flexing its muscles for its chief officer. The NJEA is opening its deep pockets in an effort to elevate Spiller from union president to the governor of New Jersey. An unprecedented move that some teachers say the organization hasn't been entirely transparent about. He's a former mayor of Montclair, New Jersey, which is up in North Jersey, running as a Democrat in the primary to succeed his royal ruggedness, King Philip the Unaccountable. There are 6 candidates in the primary field for governor, including 2 members of Congress, the mayors of the state's 2 largest cities, and an influential former state Senate president. Yet, despite all that, and nobody knows who the hell this guy is. Nobody, I mean, this guy has no name recognition. None of these people really have name recognition. It's important to understand that. I mean, none of these people really do. But this is an inside process and an insider job, and that's the way it goes. His single source candidacy is drawing critics because the money from the NJEA has allowed him to outpace every one of his opponents in the advertising wars, with a pot of cash expected to dwarf even the best funded and well-known candidates. So you think about the effect the teachers union has. You think about that for a second. And when I tell you that they are way too powerful, and the reason why we will not have school choice, because Democrats will never embrace school choice, they will run from it. If they ever did, like Cory Booker at one point did, like Josh Shapiro at one point did, the minute they have statewide or national ambitions, they pretend like they never uttered the words before. That's because of how much power and money these teachers unions have, whether it is on the state level or the national level, with the troll under the bridge, Randy Weingarten, who's so powerful she was able to write the reopening guidance for schools that the CDC put out. And all these teachers groups were able to get millions and millions and millions and millions and tens of millions more dollars diverted to schools with COVID funds. Most of that money not even spent. So he's presents himself, this guy in particular, as this blue collar guy. This is a lesson nationally about how powerful these unions are and how corrupt this whole process is. He's like, yeah, I'm just a teacher. I'm a blue collar teacher. I'm just a guy like that. I'm just a guy like you. Craig Hoffman, a good government advocate with Public Citizen, a Washington-based public interest group, said, I find that startling. You know, had Trump tried something as bad as that, the whole country would be up in arms. If you own a phone, you've probably seen Spiller's smiling face on social media. Turn on the TV and alongside your favorite news program, he's there in commercials, taking the fight to President Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk. Check your mailbox and you may find slick, glossy mailers touting his accomplishments in public life. Tax filings show the union has already invested $22.25 million and counting to benefit this guy. How this is legal, I have no friggin' idea. I have no idea how this is legal. And credit to NJ.com for highlighting this, because I figured they would not. I'm pleasantly surprised by them actually highlighting this. It's all being funded by union dues. So the teachers in New Jersey, who are part of the New Jersey Education Association, and many of them opt out of the union, and they're smart to do so because they don't want their money going to this kind of nonsense. Like, I had a friend who was my daughter's kindergarten teacher. She was wonderful, and she got out of the union. She said, I want no part of this. I don't want my money going to this. I want nothing to do with this. But it's not the easiest process in the world. There's blowback you get, politically speaking, from your fellow union members. There's a teacher named John Napolitani in Monmouth County, New Jersey, who said the spending here on this guy running for governor, this Sean Spiller guy, is disappointing. He headed the Asbury Park Education Association for 2 decades and also serves as mayor in neighboring Ocean Township. A proud Democrat and lifelong union supporter, Napolitani said he was dismayed to learn that the $1,300 he pays to the union each year was helping fund this guy's campaign to run for governor of New Jersey. And I'm sure that if the average NJEA member knew that, I think they'd probably blow a gasket, he said. He worries that the spending will cost union members because teachers land on all sides of the political spectrum, and the state has been moving to the right. New Jersey has been moving to the right. New Jersey being one of 2 states with governor's races this year, we have a chance to win New Jersey this November. But you think about what we're up against here. The New Jersey Education Association has already spent $22.25 million promoting this hack to become the Democrat nominee for governor. Now, what happens if he becomes a nominee? What happens if he becomes a nominee? Now, how much more money are they going to spend in the general election? How this is legal, I have no idea. And if you are a teacher, you should be furious at this. But this is a lesson across the country right now. We're talking about abolishing the Department of Education on the national level, right? So we're talking about that on the national level. And we have Linda McMahon there, whose job is to put herself out of a job and shut down her own department, which I think is outstanding. You have the president of the United States saying school choice is the civil rights issue of our time. And he's correct. It is. Absolutely is. The areas where you have some of the worst schools in the country are in urban areas. Kids that are getting some of the worst education in the country happen to be black children, brown children, as the left describes them, children of color. Yet the teachers union is steadfastly against school choice, vouchers, charter schools, all of it. And what they want to do is find candidates who are also against those things and throw lots and lots of cash at them. And so politicians that want to run for state or national office have to do the bidding of the teachers union. And that means then, for example, if there's a pandemic and schools have to be closed, they don't have to be closed. But if the teachers union says they have to be closed, then they have to be closed. Get it? That's how that works. That's how the little game works. Did schools have to be closed? Absolutely not. Our kids were fine. Our kids were safe during COVID. No kids died of COVID. Kids died during COVID, but they didn't die of COVID. Kids were fine. But and the teachers, even after they were vaccinated, still didn't want to come back to the classroom. So the NJEA fought that, too, as did the National Teachers Union and teachers groups around the country did. Their power is second to none. We hear all the time the media complaining about the power of the NRA, the power of the Federalist Society. The teachers union dwarfs all of them in terms of their power, their sheer power and money, too, because they take money from their members on the state level, the national level, and then they use that money for politics. And in some places, you can opt out of your money being used for political purposes, but at the same time, it's very murky because they also put advocacy messages out there that are not necessarily political because they're not really driving a political message, yet they are inherently political, and you know it and I know it. So here you have a state Republicans could win. If Donald Trump comes to New Jersey and campaigns, I don't know if he's going to endorse in the governor's race. You know, depending on who you ask, he's going to endorse candidate A or candidate B. I don't know if he's going to endorse. I have no inside information on this. I know that there are people in Trump world who are connected to several candidates who are running. And I don't know if it makes sense for the president to get involved in a primary. There's an old saying, you don't endorse down in politics. But in the general election, obviously, you've got groups like Scott Presser's Early Action and our buddy Paula Scanlon. They're working very hard to get Republicans registered to vote. They're working double time. Trump lost New Jersey by less than 6 points, but there was no effort to get him elected in New Jersey. There was no effort. Everybody was working to win Pennsylvania. So all my friends who are Republican operatives in Jersey were crossing the river to come to PA to help us out to ensure we won Pennsylvania, because whoever won Pennsylvania became president of the United States. As we all know, that's exactly how it worked out. But this coming November is different. And this coming November, everybody from Pennsylvania has to cross the river to come to New Jersey to help out and get the vote out so that we can flip New Jersey red. But when you think about how much money's out there, the teachers union, what they control, the kind of power they have. For his part, this guy, Sean Spiller, who's running as a Democrat, who's taking $22.25 million from the New Jersey Education Association, makes no apologies, saying he won his union's endorsement fair and square like any other candidate. He says his funding is better than raising money from developers, Wall Street, or Elon Musk. Who am I getting it from? Everybody knows, he said. There are people who voluntarily join a union. We know we've got to collectively pool our dollars to be able to compete. He's a former high school science teacher. He earns a $370,000 a year salary as president of the New Jersey Education Association. Pretty good money. $370,000 to run the state's largest teachers union, the NJEA. Now, as the head of the union, making $370,000 a year, he's able to drive the union to back his candidacy for governor and throw $22.25 million his way to run for governor of New Jersey. How this is legal, I'll ask the question for the 10th friggin' time, because I have no idea how this is legal. The NJEA says he's not involved in funding decisions by the union related to his campaign. The union says it has worked with election attorneys to ensure it's complying with all the laws. Mm-hmm. Right. The NJEA spokes hack Stephen Baker said, "We have supported many independent expenditure efforts in the past, including in three gubernatorial election cycles prior to this one. Our union is a representative democracy with members from across the state elected by their peers to make those endorsements and budgeting decisions. The union's members understand what is at stake for New Jersey students and families in this election, and they are working every day to make sure that Sean wins on June 10th and November 4th. If you're a teacher in New Jersey, if you're an educator in New Jersey, and you're paying your union dues, and this money's going right to this guy's campaign for governor, how does that make you feel?" Now, remember, he technically has nothing to do with the millions being spent on his campaign. This is the dirty little thing about politics that I just find remarkable. So they have this campaign finance limit in New Jersey. So nobody can collect more than $5,800 in the primary and $5,800 in the general from a group or a person. So they're putting all these messages out on his behalf, but they're not doing it in conjunction with his campaign, you see. Super PACs. And this is what's happening. This is corrupt. This is ridiculous. It's amazing how this is legal, like I said. And this group, Working New Jersey, which is a socialist leftist group, they have got over $17.25 million from the NJEA's main political funding wing, Garden State Forward. In August, Working New Jersey raised eyebrows across the political establishment when it informed the State Election Law Enforcement Commission it was going to spend $35 million in the governor's primary. All these teachers, all these educators out there, all this money that's going to pay teachers and educators, and then that money then goes to pay the unions, and then the unions then spend it to elect Democrats and leftists to all these various positions. And that's what happens. Anne Marie Pacalembo has directed the high school orchestra in Hamilton Township, Mercer County, for 29 years, and has taught even longer than that. She isn't happy with how the New Jersey Education Association is pushing this guy's candidacy. She said, "I can't believe there's not an uproar coming from the members saying, hold on, what's going on? I think a lot of people don't even know he's running yet because they're not paying attention. They're so busy with their kids and their lives." $22.25 million this guy's gotten from the teachers union. It's amazing. It really is. And I got news for you. When these Democrats are out there like Bernie Sanders and others screaming about the oligarchy, screaming about rich people like Elon Musk and others, where's the national attention over this? Where's the national attention over this, for example? I'm just curious. You know, I'm curious about this. You got Bernie Sanders right now and AOC on the campaign field screaming about the oligarchy. And you have the largest teachers union in the state of New Jersey funneling $22.5 million to help get this guy elected governor and win the primary. And it's all wasted, too, because if he doesn't win the primary, all that money goes out the window. And he has not raised enough money to qualify personally, to qualify for the state's matching funds program, meaning he won't even be on the debate stage for the actual official sanctioned debate. See what I mean? So they're basically wasting close to $35 million between these two organizations to pump up this guy in the Democrat primary. And it's probably all going to be wasted if he doesn't win the primary in June, which if I'm a betting man, he's not going to. So you listen to Bernie Sanders scream about the oligarchy. And shall we do that? Shall we listen to Bernie scream about the oligarchy? We have a number of audio clips for you about that from over the years. Of Bernie Sanders screaming about the oligarchy and just how powerful they are. Even America's mother-in-law screaming about the oligarchy. But here's Bernie Sanders since 1993 screaming about the oligarchy. I just wonder to Bernie what he thinks about $22.5 million of NJEA money going to a Democrat running for governor of New Jersey. How that sits with him, I'm curious about that. Cut 23.
This great country of ours is moving very rapidly in the direction of oligarchy. The United States of America oligarchy. Today is increasingly becoming an oligarchy. More and more moving toward an oligarchy. We are moving in the direction of oligarchy. We will move even more rapidly in the direction of an oligarchy. This great country is evolving into an oligarchic society. It is called oligarchy, and that is the system we are rapidly moving toward. This is a budget that moves our country rapidly into the direction of oligarchy. A handful of billionaires are moving this entire planet toward an oligarchic society.
Start off with the bad news, which is pretty bad, and that is that under Donald Trump, this country is hurtling rapidly toward oligarchy.
Since 1993, he's been warning about oligarchy. By the way, Matt DeSantis, is it oligarchy or oligarchy? What is the correct pronunciation? I'm just curious about that. Do you know?
I always say oligarchy, but Bernie Sanders would know better than I would, so I'll defer to his judgment.
Justin, do you have an opinion on this? Is it oligarchy or oligarchy?
I've always said oligarchy, like Matt. I don't. Maybe it's the New York accent in him that makes it sound like oligarchy. Maybe that's why he sounds like that. But I, everywhere I've seen it said or read, it's always been oligarchy.
It's oligarchy, not ol. Like. I mean, he said it since 1993 so many times, you'd think at some point he'd get it right. And by the way, he hasn't lived in Brooklyn since like 1942. So when is he going to lose the Brooklyn accent is my question. That's the other question I have. He left Brooklyn before the Dodgers did, and he still has that Brooklyn accent. All right, here's him again ranting about the oligarchy. But he conveniently leaves out some billionaires. So he grilled the Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, on this. This is our happy hour, by the way, brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Have you made your plans yet for the summer? Well, book your Memorial Day stay today. Rooms are going fast. Book direct with them at thegrandhotelcapemay.com. Go to grandhotelcapemay.com for the best rates and do it now. So Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, before Bernie Sanders, and as Bernie screams about the billionaires and the oligarchy, he doesn't mention a couple of ones that Joe Biden recognized with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, people like George Soros, for example. Then Bernie just says it's not about one particular person after ranting about particular people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. Cut 24.
When you have a handful of people like Musk, who will soon be part of the Trump administration, and others, when you have three people owning more wealth than the bottom half of American society, when these people have enormous influence over the media, when they spend huge amounts of money in both political parties to elect candidates, what Biden said last night is we're moving toward an oligarchy. I'm asking you that question. Do you think, forget how they made their money, do you think that when so few people have so much wealth and so much economic and political power, that that is an oligarchic form of society?
Well, I would note that President Biden gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom to two people who I think would qualify for his oligarchs. So
this is not a condemnation of any one individual.
Not a condemnation of any one individual, even though I'll scream about Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk till my face turns blue. But I'm not going to mention the S word, okay? It's almost like he's an employee of Odyssey. Bernie. Thank you for getting that. Bernie also, during his Coachella. Now, what is Coachella exactly? Do you guys, it's a music festival, right?
Yeah. Big music festival in California.
What does it cost to go to Coachella?
I can't imagine it's inexpensive. I would assume that if you've got that many people flocking to one area, then at the very least, the price of hotels and housing is going to skyrocket. As far as tickets go, I'm not sure, but I can look it up real quick.
I think I read somewhere that... It's the prices there for example, it's like $20 for a vegan cheesesteak. You know, I mean, in other words, and it's big money to go. It's not cheap. It's not free. Ooh. It's not a free event.
It's expensive. I had no idea it was this much money. So the tickets range from $600 to almost $700. And if you want VIP passes, you're looking at up to $1,400 per ticket.
Okay. $1,400 a ticket to go to Coachella, this music festival in California. All right. So this is the perfect place, then, to scream about the oligarchy. No better place to do it, then. Perfect place to do it. It's basically like people just sitting in a public park with somebody strumming a guitar. It's basically just like that. Except if you paid $1,400 to listen to him do it. Otherwise, it's just like that. So here he goes on stage to yell and scream, cut 25.
We need you to stand up to fight for justice. To fight for economic justice. Social justice and racial justice. Now we got a president of the United States who, I agree, he thinks that climate change is a hoax. He is dangerously wrong, and you and I are going to have to stand up to the fossil fuel industry and tell them to stop destroying this planet.
He's such a chipper. It's such a positive message, isn't it?
All over this country, not in California, not in Vermont, where I'm from, but in Florida, where Maxwell is from, many other states, politicians are trying to take away a woman's right to control her own body. We need you to stand up and fight for women's rights. We have an economy today that is working very well for the billionaire class, but not for working families.
Of which none of you are, since you spent $1,400 to be here.
An economy that works well for everybody, not just the 1%.
Now that that's over, let me go get a $40 cheesesteak at Coachella with my $1,400 ticket. Oh, man. You know, the problem, though, and this is what I mean. And as you hear the media gushing about all these crowds and all these rallies with Bernie and AOC, I want you to remember something. Bernie had big rallies in 2016. And what happened? The Democrat establishment stopped him. Bernie had big rallies in 2020. What happened? The Democrat establishment stopped him. In 2024, they knew that Joe Biden's brain was jello, yet they would not allow an open primary. They would not allow an open convention. Why? Because they were terrified Bernie Sanders would win. So this is what you take to the bank. The Democrat Party would rather have someone they can control lose than someone they can't control win. Could Bernie have won in 2016? It's entirely possible. His message of populism and fighting for the workers, he and Trump have very similar messaging points, other than the fact that, you know, one's a socialist and one's a capitalist, but very similar in terms of fighting for white working class voters and bringing jobs back and fighting against the system and being against war and all the other things. But the Democrat Party would never allow him to be the nominee. Nothing's going to change if he runs in 2028. Same with AOC. Nothing will change. This party, they're a bunch of control freaks, and they want to control the process. So you're going to hear a lot of stories in the next coming weeks about his crowds and him screaming about the old oligarchy. But you will. But you don't have to worry, because they'll never let him be the standard bearer. They might let Gretchen Whitmer do it. Although the picture of her covering her face in the White House is now being compared to her Michael Dukakis moment. Yes, the Michigan governor and nursing home killer, Gretchen Whitmer, was so embarrassed to be in the White House, she covered her face. And it's being described as her Michael Dukakis moment. If you remember Dukakis with the tank and the helmet. I'll share that with you upon my return. Natural Lawn of America was here today treating my lawn. It's a beautiful thing. I love it. I love the fact that they take such pride in what they do and that they are a local family-owned company dedicated to ensuring you have a beautiful green lawn, lush and thick, with fewer weeds. Guaranteed. That's the Natural Lawn of America difference. You see these big lawn care companies out there. They drive by, they spray, move on to the next lawn, spray. That's not what Natural Lawn of America does. Everything they do is customized to your lawn's needs, and it is safer for the kids, safer for the pets, with guaranteed results. So I love the fact that people will admire how green and lush my lawn is. I had absolutely nothing to do with it other than many years ago making the call to Natural Lawn of America. The best part is with their full service program, every year they seed your lawn for free. That's right. They will seed your lawn for free, and that makes such a huge difference. That overseeding every year is the difference in that lush, beautiful, thick green lawn. So call them today, 1-800-FREE-SEED. You'll get guaranteed results, better insect care, organic fertilizers, and guaranteed. 1-800-FREE-SEED. Choose my lawn care company, Natural Lawn of America. Greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zeoli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Some people follow the rules. I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lot to talk about regarding the deep state, no doubt about that. There's always something to talk about with the deep state. And that's why I'm very, very happy to welcome back to the show investigative journalist, our buddy, Gerald Posner. You can follow him on X at Gerald Posner, and he's a machine lately, especially with the release of the JFK files. How you doing, my friend? Good to see you again.
Good. Rich, great to be with you. As a matter of fact, I really liked you on Fox when you were talking about Gavin Newsom and his embrace of the bro culture. You were spot on.
Well, thank you. I think the guy's a complete fraud.
I gathered that. You know what I like about you is you don't mince words. You actually just say it the way it is. This is it. You hit the nail on the head, and somebody can disagree with you, but you're going to tell them exactly what you feel. And that's, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm doing that with people about the deep state. I'm telling them, hey, okay, deep state, bad, do a lot of things against the best interest of the American public, but not every time. And so occasionally I carve out these times when I say they weren't the ones behind it, and then people argue with me all day long.
Well, you know what's amazing is that you wrote, I think, one of the most definitive books about the Kennedy assassination, Case Closed, which I recommend everybody read. It's an outstanding book. You get some people who don't like you, they malign you by saying you're a CIA, like you're paid by the CIA, you're a shill for the CIA. Yet you're literally, as we speak, having a problem getting documents from the Central Intelligence Agency. Is that not correct?
Rich, that's absolutely correct. I mean, I have trouble all the time getting documents from the CIA, but you have to understand this from the perspective of somebody who really believes what I call the Oliver Stone theory, the whole kitchen sink. Deep state killed JFK, they killed RFK, they killed MLK. And then a guy like me comes along and says, by the way, I happen to think that actually Oswald pulled it off. A lot of people in the CIA hated JFK. Anti-Castro Cubans hated him. The Cubans hated him. Castro did. But I think Oswald beat everybody there. And then they say, what? You've got to be kidding. You must be working for the agency. So then I say, well, hold on a second. I've been fighting for like 5 years to get a set of documents out. You have to file lawsuits and everything else. And they say, that's like professional wrestling. You must arrange that with the CIA. You ask for the documents. They withhold it. Then you file a lawsuit. It's all for show. So they don't believe anything. You understand? In the end, you can't convince them, no matter what's happened, that you're not actually part of the deep state if you actually ever say you think Oswald might have killed Kennedy, not as part of a conspiracy.
Yeah, and so you've been very critical of the intelligence community, and that's why I wanted to get you on the show today to talk about this. Well, a couple things. First of all, you're the author of the definitive book, Pharma, Exposing the Pharmaceutical Industry. What do you hope to see now that you've got Bobby Kennedy in place, you've got Marty McCarry there, Jay Bhattacharya there. What do you hope to see when it comes to reforms of the pharmaceutical industry?
Boy, you just named the key people, Bhattacharya, Makari, Kennedy. For the first time, we have people in charge of the major mechanisms of the federal government for public health that are not allies and in the pocket of the pharmaceutical industry. They are not people who want to come along and make a deal for pharma bottom line to be better than it was last year. They're looking out for the best interests of the American consumer, in this case, patients. And I think that they're going to put pharma through the ringer. It's long overdue. They're going to make them stand up and show why they're charging the prices they do. They're going to make them stand up and explain why they're extending patents past 17 years, past 30, past 40, why they continue to manipulate and game the system so much. I think we're going to see a series of historic changes that take place in the next 4 years, and changes that, if they're done correctly, could actually change the way public health is dealt with in this country so that patients come before profits. That would be fantastic.
It seems like so far, Bobby Kennedy, as the Secretary of HHS, has said that the regulatory function is a joke. And I mean, you know, what's the point of having regulators if they're not actually going to regulate? And this revolving door between Big Pharma and the FDA or whatever other three or four letter health agency, where they just sign off on things because they know they're going to wind up getting a job one there. I mean, led to the opioid epidemic, for example, as you've talked about. The puberty blockers, how they're not approved by the FDA for what they're being used for, yet they're being used. I mean, this isn't pharma, Big Pharma. It's not like something you say, you go, well, Big Pharma, deep state. I mean, there's a ton of cash here that they throw at Washington. And you've outlined all that for us. I mean, what kind of money are we talking about? The kind of power and influence this organization has?
The biggest lobbying group in the country is the pharmaceutical industry by far. The top 10 biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world spend more money on marketing and share buybacks than they do on research and development. So we always hear that old line, oh, if you don't let them charge high prices, they can't do the R&D to develop the new drugs. It's just not true. What you said just a second ago, the biggest prescription lethal drug epidemic in American history, the opioid epidemic, that was OxyContin, has gone on to fentanyl. The person at the FDA that approved the language that said, by the way, you, Purdue Pharma, on your OxyContin, because it's extended release, you'll be able to use language that it's less addictive. There was no study to prove that's the case. And guess what? He goes to work a few years later for four times the salary at Purdue Pharma, running their medical division. So that's what people don't like. And then when they can't get the approval of the FDA, you hit the other thing on the head, Rich, which is they just dispense the drug without having it approved, like they do for puberty blockers. So in the United States, we allow, and maybe Bobby Kennedy is finally going to address this, we allow doctors to dispense a drug approved for one purpose, like diabetes or for cholesterol, for any other purpose that that doctor deems fit. So medications that are actually used on very serious instances for keeping people's hormones in balance are used instead on children who have no say in the process to block them from developing puberty under the mad idea that they're going to be able to switch their sex. This is a form of child mutilation that's playing out with thousands of children across the country. And meanwhile, the drug companies who are peddling the material are making literally billions of dollars. It's a disgraceful story.
Gerald Posner is with me, award-winning investigative journalist, and you should definitely follow him on X at Gerald Posner and read all of his books because they're all outstanding. You have a piece in Skeptic a couple weeks ago. It was published, but it's very important right now. Now that we have a new attorney general in Pam Bondi, if Kash Patel as the FBI director, Tulsi Gabbard as director of national intelligence, who I'm incredibly fond of personally. I'm fond of all of them, but I mean, you know, I have the pleasure of having all three of them on my show over the years, and I'm very fond of all them being there. Your piece entitled Fighting Each Other, How U.S. Intelligence Rivalries Hampered the Battle Against Islamic Terrorism. So I want to ask you about that, Gerald Posner, and then what you want to see these three individuals do to ensure, along with the new CIA director as well, John Ratcliffe, to ensure that we don't have this happen ever again.
Look, you know, Rich, this is a problem. The fact that the intelligence agencies we spend so much money on don't share information with each other because they're proprietary about it. They develop a lead. They develop a source. They've got somebody inside the system. They've got a tap on somebody. Then they get the information, and guess what? They don't want to give it to anybody else because they want to disclose their source and how they got it. So the FBI doesn't tell it to the CIA. The CIA is not telling it to Army Intelligence. The Defense Department is keeping it secret. And as a result, our enemies exploit that all the time. They did it on 9/11. The CIA knew about two of the hijackers from Saudi Arabia who moved to California. They took out California driver's license and their real names. They were living there openly. They had a car. They never told anyone else about them. And they end up on the planes on 9/11. That problem of sharing information, I've talked about it in the Kennedy assassination. I believe that the assassination might have been preventable if the CIA had reported to the FBI the unhinged behavior of Lee Harvey Oswald in Mexico City when he went to the Soviet mission and the Cuban mission just 6 weeks before the Kennedy assassination. But they never did that. And I think that what's going to happen this time is we're not just going to get talking points from the government. We have people in place in terms of Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard that are really going to make the changes. They're getting inside these agencies and they're saying, guess what? It's not business as usual. You can't be the same CIA that didn't know the Shah of Iran was going to fall a day before he fell. You can't be the same CIA that never knew October 7th was about to happen. The same CIA that wasn't able to predict 9/11. We put all this money into the intelligence agencies and they get it wrong time and again. They got it wrong even on the caliphates when ISIS was coming up. And so they have a black budget that is one of the great, oh my God, if you were able to let Musk and Doge free on the black budget, they would have a field day. But it'll be a problem, right? Imagine. But that's going to have to be done by Gabbard. It's going to have to be done by Patel. And they're going to have to look into this enormous budget that has grown over the years that everybody in the government says, oh, can't look in there. That's all secret. We're doing the top secret stuff and the best things for the country. If you're doing that, and I have no doubt that you're trying to do it, why are you wrong so many times in history on protecting the best interests of the country? And then eventually we get embroiled in a war after the screw up takes place because we've missed the intelligence in the first place. We can't have this play out the way it's played out before.
Gerald Posner's with me. It's great to have him today. We're talking about the intelligence community and the failures that led to really 9/11 and so many other things as well, hampered the battle against Islamic terrorism. Must read piece over at skeptic.com. So the thing about what I worry about is that as much as I have full faith in the three of them and the four of them, Ratcliffe too, and I'll say the five of them with the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, it's all the people under them who've been there for decades. And this is the problem with bureaucracy in general, right? It's the same problem we have at the FDA or the NIH, or it's that these people think that they can outlive whoever's at the top. And they're not wrong because they can. They've been career bureaucrats who know how to work and game the system. And so when you have somebody come in from the top and try to reform, they go, I'll just wait and delay and delay. And then eventually there'll be a new president, a new administrator, one who more aligns with my beliefs and my values. So I'm going to ignore this. Is there a way we can get around that, not only with the intelligence aspect of this, but going back to what we talked about with, say, taking on big food or taking on big pharma?
It's going to be difficult. You're absolutely right, because, Rich, the ingrained bureaucracy, what I call that sort of bureaucracy that lives on past every president, is the part that's the toughest to pry apart. You know, my wife is British, and in the UK, they don't even change the top of the departments often. They stay there forever. They're lifetime civil servants. So it's impossible to get anything done if you come in with a really different point of view than what you expected them to do. And I think that in this case, you do have disruptors in place. So yes, to some extent, the big disruptors are Pete at Defense and without a doubt, Tulsi, and with you certainly have it at FBI, and you're going to see that time and time again. With Ratcliffe at CIA, he's more of a company man in some ways. I don't mean that as a bad thing. He's very intelligent and very good, but he doesn't seem as much a disruptor to me. And unfortunately, gotcha. The disruptors are going to get the pushback. We're going to know when they are really making changes that are good. You know why? Not because they're telling us, but because we're going to see the leaked stories coming out from the CIA and from DNI that are going to say, oh, you know what? Kash Patel is doing X, Y, and Z. Oh, my God. You know, Tulsi Gabbard just looked the wrong way at somebody over here who was trans. There are going to be all these stories to take our eye off the ball, to distract us, that we'll try to take them down, to somehow tarnish their reputation. Those stories will be leaked, they'll be manufactured, and they'll be done by the bureaucracy trying to save itself. It's a bit of what, you know, recently you saw it with Musk when he was saying the people that are going to complain the loudest about our cuts are the ones who are gaming the system, the ones who are pulling off for fraud. They're going to be screaming the loudest to stop it and trying to make it look as though we're doing the bad job. It's going to be the same inside here in the intelligence divisions.
Jared Pazner, when we think about the idea of, say, like the Epstein files, for example, and why we haven't gotten them yet. And there's so many people that are waiting for this. And, you know, the idea that maybe he was involved in espionage on behalf of the United States of America or something like this. I mean, a lot of the secrets our government keeps. And I think this ties in with the Kennedy assassination. It's the why are there so many secrets? And this, it fuels skepticism. It fuels conspiracy theory, because if we find out that one thing is wrong, the natural inclination of people is to say, well, then is everything you've told me wrong? And and why does the government keep playing these games? Even as you try to get information, they delay and they delay. What is it about the government that drives them to keeping secrets from the American people, who really, if this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, our government really should not have any secrets from us?
No, I agree with you. Look at Rich. So I don't want them to give us the secrets of how they penetrated a foreign adversary. If they've got a double agent inside the Chinese Politburo, you don't know about it. Great. More power to them. That's fantastic. We'll read about it in 20 years. And we'll read about what great things were able to be done. But on the most part, 99% of the material out there, we as the American people have a right to know what are in the files about Epstein, of Kennedy, and the government holds on to them. It absolutely is infuriating. I'll give you one quick example on the JFK case. There's a file that I've wanted to see for years. It was partially redacted, and they held back a page and a half. It's a 1961 memo from a JFK aide, Schlesinger, and he's talking about the CIA. And he's saying, hey, the CIA is really terrible. You've got to watch out for it. And many of us thought for a long time, maybe that's the memo underneath the blacked out part, is where Schlesinger says to JFK, I think the CIA is actually trying to destabilize your government. And then Kennedy might have said, you know what, I'm going to break them up. And they said, no chance. And they went ahead and killed him. It's a fair line of thinking. So finally, they declassified the part that they've held back for 62 years in the Schlesinger file. And guess what? It's about personnel. It's about Schlesinger saying in the Paris embassy, there are too many CIA operatives operating under the cover of the State Department. And we really shouldn't have that many. They also are paying for too many informants in South America and in Europe. So they didn't release that because they don't want to tell our enemies that we're running so many operatives out of Paris and that we have these informants in these South American and European countries. But it's absolutely madness. It has nothing to do with the assassination in the end. But people believe, the average person believes, I believe as an investigator, that when you redact something, you hide it, you seal it, you fight to keep it secret, you've got something big to hide. And then when it turns out that it's not that big, when it's finally revealed, you think to yourself, you know what? They must have destroyed the real incriminating material. So they never answer to anybody's satisfaction. They are their own worst enemies when it comes to releasing files and documents to government.
Yeah, and that's why on April 9th, you tweeted this out, and I wrote you back and said, I want to get you on the show to talk about it. You said, most non-journalists have no idea how utterly frustrating it is to use FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, to pry docs from the government. Quite separate from the JFK files, I have lots of pending FOIA requests on other topics. This CIA file just arrived with one additional sentence unredacted, and everything else is blacked out. Sometimes I think they just hold back until the reporter is asking for it, loses interest. That's not going to happen with me. So now it's another appeal. But, you know, you show the images of this on your X account, Jared Pazner, and it's a joke. It's all blacked out. It looks like an X-ray is really what it looks like. You know what I mean? Like, you're seeing just black.
No, Rich, it's like preposterous. And I'll tell you, I understand that I'm asking for a sensitive line of material because I have a hypothesis that I've not yet proven. I need the documents to find out that the CIA in the 90s use some Islamic terrorists as informants. They made a deal with them that said, hey, you know what? We're going to let you off free. We won't come and kill you. We won't track you down and bring you to justice, but you're going to tell us about other attacks taking place elsewhere in the world. Now, I've got some good leads on it. I'm asking for specific documents that I think might add to that and reveal it and give me more names. So the CIA first refuses to give anything at all. Then in this recent release, which takes me over a year and a half to get, they literally just open up a couple of sentences that are nothing at all, and they black out the rest of the pages entirely. They really do hope that in the end, I'll either lose interest, I'll go on to another subject, I'll have to pay my mortgage, and so I won't be able to wait forever. They try to outweigh you, and that's the unfortunate thing. But the good news is, I really believe that in the Trump administration, they are going to shake the documents out. They're going to get things declassified that no other administration would have had. The president has the final word. He can declassify a lot of material with a swipe of the pen, and I think this president will do that.
I got to let you go. This has been fun as always, but I got 10 seconds. Did Hitler die by suicide, or did he escape to Argentina or Brazil?
I hate to be the party pooper. I do believe he died in Berlin, but he did have an escape plan to South America. He just never executed it.
Interesting. To be continued, my friend.
All right.
To be continued.
Thanks.
Gerald Posner, follow him on X at Gerald Posner. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Bye.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. Big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. We have a lot to get to in our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. I just want to let you know, when it comes to your vacation, you got to start thinking about the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, because it's a beautiful place to stay. Look, I want you to make your summer vacation now, because Memorial Day is going to be here before you know it. And if you don't plan, you're going to be stuck home while everyone's making memories at the beach. So book your Memorial Day weekend stay today at the beautiful Oceanfront Grand Hotel in Cape May, New Jersey. It's my happy place, and you're going to love it there so much. Now, the longer you stay, the more you save in resort credits. For example, stay the whole week, you're going to get $80 a night in resort credits to make purchases at Hemingway's restaurant, the outdoor pool bar, beach concession stand, take the family on a whale-watching boat cruise, whatever you like. And the Grand is also the perfect place to host a wedding, corporate event, baby shower, bridal shower, and so much more. To book your stay today at the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, call 800-257-8550, 800-257-8550, or visit them online at grandhotelcapemay.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.